Hello and welcome to the second episode of the Right Dishonourables on the Fringe podcast. For this episode, I bent the rules somewhat by interviewing the conservative activist Chloe Shendall Wilson. As you'll hear from Chloe, she's just about to enter a job in local government, but has previously worked in the House of Commons and more generally for the Conservative Party and particularly the Big Tent Ideas Festival, which is not entirely a Conservative Party thing, but they were certainly more involved in it than the other parties. One of the reasons I wanted to interview Chloe is that it's not often that you hear from a young female conservative activist. It's typically seen as the party of the pale, stale males, to use a slightly worn out phrase even at this point. We spoke about a range of subjects, obviously Brexit came up, but we also looked into some of the more nuanced ideological divisions within the Tory party, sort of harkening back to the old Tory wet versus Tory dries debate under Margaret Thatcher. This podcast was actually recorded in mid-November, but it's remarkable how little has changed really in the past 6 weeks, even allowing for all of the shenanigans around the confidence vote in Theresa May and the difficulties she's been having in getting her withdrawal agreement through the House of Commons. We'll find out more about what's going to happen to that later this January, but I feel that all of Chloe's comments remain just as relevant. We will be back with the main podcast in due course, but I'm looking to speak to as many people as possible for On the Fringe during 2019. So if you have any suggestions as to who you would like me to speak to, and the remit is broadly people who don't get a voice in mainstream media, then I'd be delighted to hear any of the suggestions you have. Now I'm going to play some music and just get on with the interview. So I hope you enjoy it. Hello and welcome to the On the Fringe podcast, where I speak to people from around the political spectrum and try and get in some outside views and voices. This week, I'm actually joined by Chloe Shendall Wilson, who it's probably best that I actually hand it over to you and you explain what it is you're actually doing in politics at the moment. But I know you've had a couple of roles in and around the Conservative Party.
Yeah, I'm a Conservative Party member and I've just finished working for an organisation and we got medical cannabis legalised and we kind of got drug reform on the political agenda and kind of got people talking about it as best we could. And I'm just about to start working in local government.
What exactly are you doing in local government?
So I'm going to be supporting the opposition, which are the Conservatives, at Sutton Council.
Okay.
I just wanted a bit of an opportunity. I think the more I've worked in Westminster, the more I've realised I think local government play a lot of the role that people maybe think MPs do, and I think they have a really important role, and they obviously have such an impact on people's direct lives. I just wanted the opportunity to kind of learn a bit more. I haven't had much experience in local government so far, so I wanted the opportunity to learn a bit more. This job literally just came up. So I'm about to start that, probably the start of next month.
Well, what sort of struck me about you actually is that there aren't a lot of prominent young female conservative activists of any sort. And I guess it's probably worth starting with, how is it that you actually got drawn into the Conservative Party? Because I'm sure you're aware there's a bit of potentially a stigma attached to the idea of being a young person and being a conservative.
That is true. And I have found that actually since I've joined, I found a lot of people who had maybe assumed that I was more left-wing, just based on the kind of issues I'm interested, like drug reform is seen to be not really a conservative thing, have been a bit funny, or they've assumed that I've sort of changed or somehow heartless because I'm a conservative. They see you in a different light, but I think there's not much you can do about that.
You're talking about people in your personal life then?
Yeah, and people. So how I got into politics was I was president of my student. I did a lot of community stuff at university, so I did a lot of volunteering. I kind of was on the volunteering committee and did a lot of work to encourage students to get more involved in the local community. And then from there, I became the president of the Students' Union. Again, not from a lot of people use that as a kind of stepping stone, but at that point in time, I hadn't even thought about politics. I just found out how much the student union had an impact on the students, and I didn't think many people really knew. And so I thought, I want people at the university to understand that they can use the student union to their benefit. You know, no matter what it is, what they've come to university to do, they can improve their time here through the student union, which is why I stood. And I just loved it. I had such a good 2 years, and I feel like I got a lot more students engaged, and I got a lot more students realizing they can make a difference. And my role was a representative I mean, before, people saw it as kind of a popularity contest, and I think people saw it as maybe they didn't really understand what you did if you were an elected officer, and a lot of people, you know, kind of, are you in it for yourself and all that kind of stuff. And I feel like I changed that. I feel like I'd changed the narrative that students knew that I was there for them and there to help them achieve their goals. And I said to my managers, what is this in the real world? I love this, just being an elected representative. It's politics. you should have a think about it.
So were you a Conservative before you went to university, or did that come later?
I had a bit of a journey from being a Conservative to maybe questioning. So when I was, like, all my life, I've always, you know, going back to being a teenager, I always supported the Conservative Party. And I remember being like a teenager in the pub and having big debates with my friend around the 2010 election. And I was always a Conservative supporter. And I set up the Conservative Society at Bournemouth University when I was a student. And in my 2 years, though, when I was in the student union, I kind of saw the other side of the argument a little bit. What being in a kind of left-wing environment gave me was an understanding of why certain people may be held back, like what barriers there are. You know, I just thought and I still do believe in personal responsibility, but being in a left-wing circle gave me a better understanding around issues around gender, around race, and all those kind of subjects. So it definitely made me question whether I was a Conservative, but ultimately my views are based on, I mean, I've grown up in a family where we've had to rely on the welfare system, and that's kind of shaped my views from quite a young age, because from such a young age I really believe that work is the best way for someone to have kind of purpose in their life, and I believe that having a job kind of empowers people, and I also believe that we really need to do what we can to kind of protect democracy. And I haven't travelled much, but in the travelling that I have done, you realise how lucky you are to live in a country that has a liberal democratic system. And I think the left-wing ideologies are always really, really well-meaning, but sometimes I think they romanticise kind of abolishing private property rights and large welfare states, and we've lived that reality. You know, we've lived in I live in a nice area, but we've always lived in a rented house. We've always had to use welfare state for whatever reason, and it's not that fun, and it's actually really disempowering. So I think right-wing policies, although they don't always sound like the left always do a good job of sounding like they come from a more compassionate place and they want to change the world and all the rest of it, but actually in reality their policies don't work, and their policies are very disempowering for people and communities. And I think sort of right-wing policies in reality empower people and they give people a purpose. So yeah, so I had a phase where I thought, oh, actually, am I Conservative? I'm not sure, because I was presented with another side of the argument, and I was with people that were all left-wing for 2 years. But ultimately, on that core issue around private property and around welfare, I always knew I was never going to be able to agree with them, and I always knew I was a Conservative. I then got offered a job with a Conservative MP, and I was like, no, this is definitely where I sit. It's time to commit. It's time to join the party.
What sort of Conservative do you see yourself as being? Or which wing of the party would you sit yourself in?
I don't know, because I don't know if I necessarily 100% fit into either. I think I'm definitely, on a lot of issues, I'm definitely on the kind of more libertarian side. I'm really against all of these laws around the sugar tax and around, yeah, things like the sugar tax are just a perfect example, and things like the energy price cap. And I really sit on that kind of libertarian wing, and around Brexit as well. My views are definitely on the kind of the ERG side, if I'm honest. So I think in that sense, I think on a lot of my principles, I'm definitely on the right. But I do, you know, a lot of the kind of issues that the left of the Tory party and the left are interested in, they're the kind of issues that brought me into politics. So issues around the environment, issues around sort of gender equality and stuff like that, I am really passionate about. But in terms of actual kind of core policy, things like Brexit and things around the kind of nanny state policies, I've definitely put myself more on the right of the Conservative Party. So I think I'm a little bit of both. I think on set issues, maybe more to the left, just in terms of I maybe share same kind of passions around certain issues like the environment or like gender equality. But I think on a lot of my core policies like Brexit, I would definitely probably sit more on the right. So I think politicians that I probably am similar to are maybe Saeed Kamal. He's really kind of passionate about community engagement. He's really passionate about kind of diversifying the Tory party, but he's definitely a libertarian. And I guess maybe similar to Zach Goldsmith as well. Zach Goldsmith's obviously really known for the environment, him and his brother, but he's kind of more on the libertarian wing as well. So, yeah, that's probably how I describe myself, I think.
You don't sound like a social conservative, though, which is where a lot of people would see the right of the Tory party as being.
Yeah, that's probably the difference. I think I'm not really a social conservative. I think I didn't study politics, so I can never answer these questions straight. But I'm probably a liberal in one sense, but like a classical liberal, because socially I'm a liberal, but economically I'm also a liberal too. So probably both.
Given those are your general views, as you say, classical liberal on the economic side and socially liberal more generally, how do you feel about the current government? We'll get on to Brexit in a little bit, but more generally their stance on, say, social issues, and you mentioned welfare and all that sort of thing, but how do you feel about the Tory party as it currently is in government?
I really like that. I really like Theresa May. I think when she gave her conference speech last year, the one that she kind of got annihilated for because of the cough and the backdrop and everything like that, I was in that room and I was quite near the front, actually. And I really, really, really warmed to her after that, because not out of pity, not because of what happened, but actually being in the room and hearing her speak, I saw a side of her that I've never seen come across on TV. I think she really let her guard down and she really showed real passion and real commitment and a real sense of duty, and I really, really admire that. And I really think that she sees her time in office as, you know, her job is to deliver Brexit, and that's the contribution she's gonna make through history or to the country. But I think my politics are probably quite different to the cabinet now. I think on a lot of policy, such as the energy price cap, such as compulsory organ donation, and a lot of our kind of economic policies, I think politically, I know in the old days they used to have a phrase called clear blue water, which is making sure that you separated the Conservative Party's policies from Labour's. And I fear that on policy, a lot of our policies are actually quite similar to what Ed Miliband's were. So there isn't that much of a comparison. It's not easy for people to tell what the difference is between our two parties. However, socially, we give off a very kind of socially conservative image. It's probably, the current government's probably the opposite to what I am, because I think I'm socially a lot more liberal, but I would have policies that are a lot probably further to the right and a lot more clear on what we actually stand for compared to Labour.
Sorry, by further to the right, you mean on the economics or on the social side of things?
I'm not sure what it counts as, but things like the sugar tax and things like, I really don't believe that it's the... I believe the best thing a government can do for people, okay, apart from the obvious like security and protecting people, but I think the best thing a government can do to empower people is through education and through having a welfare and a political system that people feel they can access. So on subjects such as the sugar tax, or such as all this talk about banning milkshakes and banning X, Y, and Z and banning certain parts of the internet, etc., etc., I think the best thing a government can do is, clearly poorer people might be impacted more by things like obesity. I just think a lot of those policies come across as a load of rich people telling poorer people how they best live their lives and that they know what's best for them. And to me, that goes against everything that I join the Conservative Party for, because I believe, you know, that we're the party of empowering people. And that's the difference between our policies and Labour's policies, is we believe in lifting people up, not keeping them down. And on subjects like the kind of nanny state policies, like the sugar tax, and a lot of the policies have come out over the last few months around banning X and stopping Y, I fear that even things like raising the price of beer and stuff, I fear that it just comes across as, you know, the rich people in the government know what's best for you, and you just need to be patronised, and we need to manage your behaviour. And I think they're done from a place of being very well-meaning, but I don't necessarily think they actually tackle any of the root causes that people face. I don't think telling people what they can and can't do necessarily solves anything. And yeah, to me, it just doesn't feel right. I think the best thing a government can do is, obviously, if someone in poverty is more likely to suffer with obesity, telling them that they can't have a McDonald's or we're going to ruin the taste of their fizzy drink, you know, the rich people in the government have know what's best for you. To me, that just doesn't sit right. And I know that doesn't come from that place. I know the intentions are always really good, but I fear that that's how it comes across to the general public. And I think actually it's about tackling the causes as to people who are in poverty. How do we help them? What do we do? Is it our education system? Is it our welfare system? Do people have addiction problems that we need to help them with? To me, just telling people what they can and can't eat or what they can and can't do it just feels very patronising, and it feels kind of the opposite of, I think, why I am a Conservative or what I stand for.
Do you identify more with those rich people, as you put it, or the poorer people, the working class people, in terms of your own background?
Not sure, because I've had quite an odd background in that I've grown up in a... I wouldn't call myself working... Like, I think it would be a bit insulting if I was to call myself working class, because I'm definitely not. Because I've grown up in a very middle-class area. I've gone to, a good school, and I live in a nice house in a nice area. And I was lucky enough that, you know, my parents always encouraged me to get a good education, encouraged me to work really hard. You know, that was kind of drummed into me from being a child, was, you know, doing as well as you can at school is the best thing you could ever give yourself in life. And if you mess up, then this could have consequences for the rest of your life. That was kind of, my parents kind of hammered that into me. But like I said, for the last sort of, or for the majority of my life, except for a brief period of about 4 or 5 years where we did own our own home, majority of my life, I have lived in a family where the parents are split, and in a family where our house is rented, and a family where I've had a single parent that has had to access the welfare state. So I think it would be insulting to call myself working class, because I'm not. I live in a nice area, and I've gone to a good school, and I've had a lot of opportunities in life. But I also understand what it's like to be in a family that lives off of benefits, and also that struggle of when you don't own your own home. You know, when your money's gone at the end of the month, it's gone, and there's no security. So that's why I really support our party and you know, our belief in home ownership. And where I really clash with the left is where I think they sometimes can romanticize about things like that, because it sounds lovely, you know, or everyone will rent their houses and we'll have really high welfare state and there's no need to work. And I've grown up in that life, and it's not empowering at all.
And it's interesting, I suppose, that people, you know, naturally associate the Conservative Party as the party of the rich that represents rich interests. You've obviously interacted a lot with the Tory party in various guises. How do you feel about that image of them? What would you say to people to discourage them from that view, I suppose?
I think it's hard, because traditionally they've always had that image, you know, and they are kind of a bit of a victim of their own history, and just, yeah, historically, I guess there is that typical image, isn't there, of Tory toff and blah, blah, blah. And I actually sometimes feel a bit sorry for them, because sometimes I think they'll always be trapped with that image, which is really difficult, just because historically that's the image they've always had. My experience hasn't been that at all. And my experience, of course, okay, you have your Jacob Rees-Mogg's and you have your Boris Johnson's and you have, you know, the old Etonians, but I actually think it's quite unfair that they have that image in a way, because yes, there are a lot of middle to upper class old Etonians in the Conservative Party, but that isn't just the Conservative Party, that is the whole of the Labour Party. Also have many, many people that have had privileged backgrounds, and so do the Liberal Democrats and all of the parties. And actually what I really like about the Conservative Party, the more I've been in the party and interacted with people in person, is something that can just be our characters. We don't feel the need to criticise other people and to call out other people on that. We tend to just be quite content with who we are. And I think a lot of upper class Conservatives don't feel guilty about it, and they don't go around pretending that they're something they're not. They just look at Jacob Rees-Mogg, he just accepts who he is, and he doesn't try and pretend he's any different. He is exactly who he is. And similarly with, I think, kind of working class Conservatives, we don't, you know, working class Conservatives won't kind of be angry or you know, resent the fact that they're working class. So yeah, I'm rambling, but my experience has been, I understand why they have that image, and I guess you can look at someone like Jacob Rees-Mogg, who I do admire. It is a very stereotypical how people see the Conservative Party, but my experience, the more I've gotten involved with them, is that's not the case, and there are people from all kinds of backgrounds involved in the Conservative Party, and there are lots and lots of working class Tories, because that is our aim, is to empower people and to give people a better life, you know, than they had, their parents had before them, and likewise to give people, give their kids a better life that they've had, and to give people, you know, a ladder to pull themselves up on. It's something that I don't really like about the other parties, and I find a bit disingenuous, is I think some people in the other parties, all of the other parties, will play that card and will criticise us for being, you know, elite or establishment or whatever. But actually, there's lots of very rich and very privileged politicians on the other side. They just kind of pretend that they're not. and they'll criticise conservatives, but they don't necessarily have as better understanding either. I think it's a problem in politics in general. I think that Parliament still has a long way to go to maybe be fully representative of the general public that they're there to serve. And I think Parliament is still not as accessible for maybe people from different backgrounds. But I don't think that's just the Conservative Party. I see, you know, the stereotype, and I understand why people think that. But I do feel for the Conservatives a little bit, because all parties have that problem of not being 100% representative, not just the Conservatives.
Is that something that you would hope to change, women politics, the diversity within politics and the diversity within the Tory party as well?
Yeah, I think so. Basically, I think sometimes decisions that are made, people think, oh, and our party does get this the most, oh, people are evil and people are just doing that to be malicious and la la la. And actually, sometimes I just think it's because maybe not enough people understand what it's like to be in that situation. So welfare is an example. You know, sometimes we can get a lot of criticism for a lot of things around welfare being cruel or problems that have occurred. But it's not. I just think it's maybe there aren't enough people in Parliament that have had those experiences, so they don't always understand. Yeah, I think across all parties, there are politicians who. If you look, for example, a few years ago, you had Miliband, you had Clegg, and you had Cameron, all went to similar schools, all from similar backgrounds, and all have had similar experiences. And I think that's bad for democracy, because I think to have a healthy democracy, you need people with a sort of broader range of backgrounds and a broader range of experiences to contribute to the democratic debate and to contribute to our democracy. With Parliament, many people think, oh, MPs just don't care and MPs are all in it for themselves, and people really criticise MPs. And I think actually majority of people in politics are in it for the right reasons. And majority of people in politics go into politics because they want to help people and they want to make a difference and they want to be of service and they want to change things. I just think there's not enough people interacting with Parliament. I think at the moment Westminster has become, maybe it's always been like this, but Westminster feels at the moment like it's very much a bubble and it's separated from the rest of society. And I think there's not enough politicians who understand the experience of their constituents. And likewise, there's a lot of people out there in the public who assume that politics is just unavailable to them, and they just assume that it's not accessible and it's not for people like them, and they'll never be able to have their voice heard. And I've been knocking on doors the last couple of weeks, actually, in Epsom, and we went door knocking the other weekend, and I spoke to this woman and she said, I've just given up hope, like I don't think anything will ever change, like I don't see any point anymore in even having like my voice heard, because I don't think anything will ever change anymore. And I think a lot of people feel that, and I think majority of people in Parliament are good people who want the best and are in there because they want to help people. And for some reason, there's this gap there of the public don't know how to influence politicians. They don't know how to have their voice heard. And politicians don't necessarily know how the public are feeling and don't necessarily know how the public feel impacted by their policies. And that could be, you know, a member of the public, and that can also be institutions, you know, that are maybe impacted by certain government policies. I think there's a real broad feeling in the country that people don't know how to get their voice heard, and people in Westminster don't always understand the impact that their policies have on people. And I think that's a real problem. And I think none of it is done out of malice. I think it's all just done because the system has become such a bubble. And again, I guess that's why it goes back to when I said about local government at the start. I think local government is a big step towards that, because more and more decisions now are made locally, but we haven't really caught up with that, I don't think.
I mean, you mentioned the public perception of politicians as in it for themselves. When you look at, say, a figure like Boris Johnson, who obviously takes up a disproportionate amount of attention in the media, don't you think there are some politicians at the top that are pretty much just in it for themselves and are very career-driven?
I mean, yeah, of course. I think... Do you know what I think? I think in Westminster, it is very easy for the place to swallow you up. I think majority of MPs go in there because they want to change the world and they want to help people. And I feel, this is just my experience of working there for, just over a year and sort of them working around, but I feel that most MPs go into there because they want to make a difference and they want to change the world and they think they're going to change everything. And they come at it from a good place. I believe if they didn't you can have much higher paid jobs, or you can have jobs with much more status and elsewhere. I do think people go into politics because they want to be of service to the country, but I think Westminster can swallow you up. I think it's so easy to be sort of lobbied, and it's easy to run away with yourself a little bit, because people treat you in there like you're something special. So it's easy for your ego to run away with you, and people, it's very easy to be lobbied and to be offered sort of free things and to be offered and to be treated almost like a bit of a god. And so I think naturally, if people aren't disciplined with themselves, I think that can run away with them. I think people can get into a mindset of thinking that there's something special. And I think people can get away with behaviour maybe that they didn't think they were going to, and kind of maybe bending to vested interests. And you know, I guess it's just corruption, isn't it? Corruption exists in all politics. We're actually very lucky that we live in a country where it's pretty minimal. You know, most countries, a lot of countries around the world, it's a hell of a lot worse. So we are lucky in that sense.
You worked in Parliament at a time where there were quite a few allegations of bullying and harassment going around. Was that something that you saw a lot of, affecting other people, potentially? I mean, potentially even affecting yourself. What was it a nasty place to work, do you think?
I didn't think it was a nasty place to work. I think there's always two sides of politics, and in Parliament and with politicians, and that there's the side of being in there to change the world and wanting to do good and wanting to help people. And then there's the other extreme of the kind of the ego and the power and the kind of greed of it all. And I think that can impact anyone. I think on the politician side, it can be easy to slip into the other side. It can be easy to start from a good place and kind of run away from yourself. I didn't see any allegations of bullying personally. Sexual harassment was definitely a thing. I'm not going to go into it, but I wasn't harassed, but I was definitely put in positions where I felt uncomfortable very early on. Actually, within my third day of being there, I walked away feeling uncomfortable, and I'd been treated differently because I'm a woman, and I'd felt like, I'm not going to say who it was with or who it was by. And I haven't reported it. Actually, I never reported it the first time round. I actually got a letter recently from the House of Commons, and I'm gonna report it, just to add. But I definitely, within about 3 days, was put in a position where I felt like I was being, like, people saw me as I wasn't there to do a serious job. People saw me as a bit of eye candy because I was a woman. So I definitely felt, as a woman, that it is a bit of a boys' club still. I really did feel that, and I did feel that you are treated a bit differently, and there is still that culture of men being quite dominant and of not getting taken seriously as a woman. My impression was it definitely felt very male dominated. And obviously the time I spent there, like, I found there were people to mix with who were in it for the same reasons I was, and I found people there that really wanted to make a difference and made me feel really positive and really optimistic. But I did see, you know, the sides of it that weren't so nice as well, and the sides of it that maybe, you know, were just power kind of going a bit mad and people getting a bit carried away from themselves. And yeah, as a woman, I felt very quickly that it's not bad, but it still has a long way to go. I think there is that kind of old boys club feel about it still.
Given that you said that you think that most people in politics, both the politicians themselves and I'm assuming their staff and the other people involved in Parliament, are in it for the right reasons. Mm-hmm. How does politics as a whole change the impression people have, which, as you say, is very negative about politicians?
One, getting more people through the door, both in elected roles and also just people who work there, like you said, for MPs or people who are staff there. And I think the responsibility for that is on parties, and it also could be on Parliament themselves. You know, if you were a person who wants to go and do work experience there, it's completely luck of the draw of who you get as your MP, because some MPs really want to, like the MP that I worked for always took on work experience students. As long as someone had made the effort to write and to say why they wanted to go into politics and could they come and do a week of work experience, my MP would always take them on. But there are some MPs that just don't have the staff, they don't have the capacity, and then they're not interested. So I think from an access point of view, Parliament itself could do more to get people in the door, whether that's through internships and work experience. And I actually think this whole harassment thing that's happened, I think there should be more of a kind of separate, I don't know if it's HR department or just there needs to be a bit of a shake up as to the independent body that deals with these procedures. And at the same time, I think that independent body could do more to get people in the door through offering work experience and internships and managing sort of jobs and getting people in. So I think Parliament itself could do more to do that. And I think the parties themselves could do more. The parties do quite a good job, but the parties, maybe just it's just a natural process of the parties kind of getting different people in through the door and reaching out. But the atmosphere itself, to be honest, I think there is a problem. There can be a problem with, I don't know how to explain it. I think these things naturally come up, like when the expense, I think when people in power do get carried away, naturally, I do think there is like, there are checks that happen. Like we had the expenses scandal in 2009, was it?
Yes.
So naturally people were doing what they shouldn't have done, but then they get caught out. And then now this harassment scandal has happened. I think when people in power do get a bit carried away from themselves and maybe get a bit corrupt, I do think that naturally things just change. I think eventually it catches up with people. Like I believe that eventually, whether it's karma or what, but things do rebalance themselves. I think in terms of getting people in the door, I think the parties and Parliament itself could do a bit more of that. But in terms of people trusting politicians, I think a lot of it, you know, is I think over the last 20 years, politics has been quite reactionary. So someone my age has grown up with, you know, the two prime ministers that have served the longest have been Tony Blair and David Cameron. And I think they were both really, really good politicians. But I think they maybe weren't. It all felt very reactionary, and it all felt like there wasn't much of a difference between any of the parties. Going back to Nick Clegg and Miliband and Cameron, they all...
What do you mean by reactionary?
I think there's no real... I think for a long time, maybe since Margaret Thatcher, there's been no real philosophy behind politics. So I think if you look at the last 100 years, if you look at Margaret Thatcher and on the other end of the scale, Clement Attlee, they both didn't go into politics to just react to what people wanted. They led governments that had a clear vision for the country, and they had a clear philosophical background, both of them. Like they had a clear philosophy, both of them, as to what they wanted to achieve and what they believed in. And the changes they enacted were because of their philosophies. Whereas I think perhaps even since Thatcher, I don't necessarily think many parties have had that vision, that really long-term vision, and that real kind of guiding philosophy behind what they want to do in government and why they want to do it. And actually, I think why a lot of young people voted, like, I don't believe that a lot of young people are actually socialists. I don't think many of the people that voted for Jeremy Corbyn are Marxists. I just don't buy it. But I think what a lot of young people saw is they've grown up with Blair, followed by Cameron, where politics hasn't necessarily meant much, or they don't really know what people stand for. And then Jeremy Corbyn's come along, and yes, he's a Marxist, but at least he has a core philosophy that he's stuck to his whole life. And I think a lot of young people saw that and thought, well, this guy's different, this guy actually stands for something. And I think on the right we haven't caught up with that. My one criticism of Theresa May was I wouldn't criticise her own policies, because she's just different to me, her politics is just different. I think she's a good politician, but my one criticism is I think she hasn't been brave enough to maybe set out clearly what she stands for. I think she's still caught up a little bit. If you look at the election campaign last year where Lyndon Crosby ran it, I think it didn't feel like her. It didn't feel like it was natural. It didn't feel like it was her standing up for what she stood for. It felt like her still trying to play the game a little bit. And I think those days are gone. I think the kind of style of politics that was started by Blair and Alistair Campbell, of sort of spin and everything's polished and it's all about managing the media, but there isn't necessarily such a really clear guiding philosophy of what the country looks like. I think those days are behind us. I think Jeremy Corbyn has changed that, and people have reacted to it in a positive light, more so than we ever thought. And I think now it's time for the Conservative Party to go back to basics and think about, okay, what do we stand for? What is our guiding philosophy?
So this seems like a good time to mention your involvement with the Big Tent Ideas Festival. I believe that was the festival that was described as Tory Glastonbury,
yeah,
am I right? Was that the intention behind that festival, and is that why you got involved in it? Is that you thought it could create that big idea that allows you to challenge Jeremy Corbyn in a serious ideological way?
I think it was and it wasn't. It was about renewing the centre-right, I think. Well, it was kind of a bit of both. One, it was to create a space to get people involved in politics, and it was to create a space to get people feeling like they could have say and bringing politics to people and bringing people in and getting them discussing politics and giving them a platform. And it was particularly the first, I think both festivals actually, the first festival in particular was definitely, there were people there from the centre left, and there were people there from the Labour Party in both, so it wasn't a set conservative thing. Because it brought people across from different parties just to talk about the future. And on big issues, I think that's important. And I thought that was a good thing. Like, I know last year, they had some people there from the centre-left just discussing issues around capitalism and things like that. And this year, there were people from the left. I remember the Global Britain tent. I know Gazella Stewart was there talking about the future. So in a way, half of it wasn't, because half of it was just about bringing people together and about creating a space for people to discuss politics. And I think in that way it was really good, and I think party conferences could learn a lot, because my experience is Conservative Party conferences are quite rigid, and this was a really nice space to kind of discuss politics in an informal atmosphere, which I loved. But then I think the secondary reason for it was to say, okay, this could be a good platform to start reinvigorating the centre-right and start coming up with ideas, exactly like you said, ideas to tackle Jeremy Corbyn, not to tackle Jeremy Corbyn, but to compete with Jeremy Corbyn on the centre.
What do you see as those big ideas potentially being? From the Big Tent specifically, but you can answer the question in a more general way.
The Big Tent specifically, there were some good ideas around the sort of the future of education, the future of work, and maybe the future of this country. I went to a really good debate, which was about what does Britain look like after Brexit, and what are the future of our relationships around the world. I personally think we need to have a better understanding of our own history and as a nation, and a look at the impact that we've had as a nation, good and bad, and to evaluate it. I think there were so many good discussions around the future of work and the future of the education system. I know someone had an idea of why don't we have better lifelong learning, and why do you just get your one shot at school? And also, yeah, how do we, the economy has changed, and the way people want to interact with the economy and has changed, and how do we manage that? But specifically in terms of what I think in terms of Jeremy Corbyn, I think we need to, again, go back to basics and kind of look at what we stand for as a party. I don't think as a party at the moment we understand exactly what we stand for and what our values are. And even when we do, we don't communicate that well enough. I think when it comes to young people, we need to have a better understanding of the issues that young people care about. And we need to, one, show an understanding of where we're not doing good enough, like the housing market, own up and say, we're not doing as well as we could be doing, and we know it's a problem, which we do, to be fair. But also around issues that young people might care about, whether that's homelessness, whether that's mental health, whether that's the environment, we don't do a very good job at communicating that to young people. I remember when I worked for my MP over the general election, and we had a debate at the university, so I kind of preempted what questions we'd be discussing and what young people would care about. And I was getting briefings through from CCHQ, and I'd say, can I have a briefing on the environment, and can I have a briefing on mental health and homelessness? And we'd done such good work, and I hadn't heard of any of it. And so let alone, and I'm a Conservative Party member, so let alone people that were at the university that were going to be asking that weren't Conservative Party members. So I think it's a mix of acknowledging where we do go wrong as a party and as a party in government. So acknowledging where we were not as good as we could be, and owning up to it. I think sometimes politicians will defend things to the death, even though we all know that it's not working. I think if we were more honest and we were, you know, a little bit less polished and just owned up to what we know we're getting wrong, people might have a bit more respect for us. And then also at the same time, our achievements, I don't think the Conservative Party is very good at shouting out about its achievements. I think it's gotten better since the 2017 election, a hell of a lot better. But I still think we all shy away a little bit from being proud of ourselves and for being happy with what we do well.
What do you feel that the Tory party does do well at the moment?
I think we've done really well in the environment, really, really, really well. I think we do well even though it doesn't come across like that, I actually think we play politics quite nicely. My experience from being in left-wing circles to then being in right-wing circles is actually, I found a lot of left-wing circles not very nice places to be, and not they were quite ruthless politically. And we may get that reputation when we're at the top, as is being displayed at the moment, but on a grassroots level, I think it's such a nicer atmosphere, and we're so much nicer to each other, and I don't think we necessarily give each other enough credit for that. And I think we're in a bit of a difficult position at the moment, because I think a lot of the problems out in the country require big radical change, and they require a style of politics which is very different to what's being done now. And I think we get all the blame for that, but I think there's going to be needed some big structural changes in Britain to confront a lot of the challenges that are faced now.
What sort of structural changes are you thinking of?
I just think things have changed rapidly and we haven't caught up. Yeah, one, I think local government needs to change. I think a lot more power needs to go to local government, and I think the funding needs to change. I would start changing taxes so it doesn't all go to central. Some of it goes locally as well, and empower councillors. I would also potentially look at the role of a councillor as to whether it should still be a part-time job, because are we getting enough people in who want to do it? Do they have enough accountability for the responsibility that they have? I think the welfare system needs to change to catch up with the nature of work, and as does sort of the treasury. I think the way people work has changed hugely, and we haven't necessarily caught up with that. Still very bureaucratic. I think education has changed as well. I think Jeremy Corbyn sort of promising free tuition fees, you know, he's been sort of written off as it was just a middle class giveaway, which in essence it is, because it impacts free tuition fees most likely benefit the middle class. But he tapped into, we've had the years under Blair where many young people are going to university, and now they're not necessarily, they've all kind of been sold the idea they all have to go to university, and then there's not necessarily the jobs at the end. But then also at the same time, being a sort of 18-year-old is a very difficult time of your life. There's a lot of pressure on you, and many people don't know what they want to do. And I think we have work in our education system to fill that gap, to be a bit bolder with lifelong learning, with you know, a lot of people who are in prison, and a lot of people who are in prison can't read or write. Like, they've been let down by the education system. And I think we need to be quite radical in the I think it needs to change. It does not fit for the education system isn't fit for the world we live in anymore, and similarly with the welfare system, because work has changed. And I think as a country as a whole, I think we don't have a good enough understanding of our own history. I think we need to, you know, we have sort of two ends of the spectrum of people who think the British Empire was the best thing that could have happened, and then a lot of people more so on the left that really resent the British Empire. But I didn't learn hardly anything at school about that. I don't think as a country we have any idea about our own history. I think people around the world have a better understanding of the empire than we do. I just think we're in a bit of an identity crisis as a nation. I think the EU referendum has kind of highlighted it, because there are a lot of people who did attach their identity to being European. That would become part of their identity. Yeah, I just think as a nation we're a little bit lost. Yeah, like I said, Parliament as a whole I think could do with a lot of reform, and I think locally it could do with, I think there are a lot of big changes that are needed, but no one seems to be radical enough to do. I think it's Westminster that's the problem and not individual parties. I think there needs to be some structural changes around the way our decision making is done and the way that Westminster works as a whole, and that isn't our party's fault, but I think we're blamed for it.
How does all of what you just said about devolution and decision-making processes feed into what's going on around Brexit for you? Do you feel that Brexit is going to enable those structural changes, or do you think it's going to go the other way?
I voted Remain, but I actually feel really positive about leaving now, and I think we should leave properly. I'm not a fan of the deal as it stands. What I think is, a nation as a whole, is it's the perfect opportunity for us now to actually kind of take a bit of a step back. And we're going to go through, when we do leave the European Union, we're almost getting a blank sheet of paper, and we're going to have the opportunity to look at all of our laws and all the way we do things, and to really change the way we do things if we want to. I don't necessarily think that Brexit has necessarily an impact on devolution, but I think what it does show is that a lot of people feel I think that the further away decision-making powers are from someone, the less empowered they feel. And I think we have a lot to learn from places like Germany, where the decision-making is a lot more local. I think too much of our power is concentrated in Westminster. You know, when the budget was announced the other week, some of the things that the Chancellor was saying, like talking about potholes and talking about, you know, roadworks and bridges and things, I can't believe that was coming out of the mouth of and it's not a criticism of Philip Hammond, it's a criticism of Westminster. I can't believe that at that level they're going into that much detail. To me, our decision making is far too central, and I think how that ties into Brexit is that it does make people feel disempowered. Most countries around the world are a lot more, or most Western countries, their decision making is a lot more local than ours is. Ours is far too centralised, I think. And I think that does have a knock-on effect for people feeling like they can have their voice heard. Because not everyone cares about party politics or necessarily cares about the national debate, but I think people do care about their communities, and people do care about being able to, knowing that things are accountable, and that they do have a way of holding their politicians to account.
You mentioned that you weren't a fan of the Brexit deal as it is currently being proposed by Theresa May. Do you expect that deal to go ahead, or do you think it will be changed?
I think that the Prime Minister seems keen on keeping it. You know, I think she had the opportunity. I think if she was gonna change it, she would have done so already. I think last Thursday, once she'd had her cabinet meeting, and then there were resignations on Thursday. Was it Thursday morning?
Friday morning, I think it was.
Okay. I think that she's quite set on keeping it. What I almost worry for her is that I don't really see how it's going to get through the Commons. So that's a bit of a worry.
So what are you expecting the outcome from this whole process to be? Do you foresee a second referendum, no deal? Or what do you think is going to happen? What would you want to happen, I suppose, might be an easier question to answer.
I would like... I actually think now that it's not my preferred option, but I think if Brussels have said that this is the only deal you're going to have, I think we should say to them, we were offered a free trade agreement for Great Britain, but not Northern Ireland. And I think our negotiating position should have been change it to include the whole of the UK. We'll have a free trade agreement for the whole of the UK, or we'll walk away. And I think the fact that we've shown that we don't want to walk away, I think has given them the upper hand, and that feels a shame. And I think that Brexit should be delivered properly, because otherwise I think I don't know what that means for our whole system. If the biggest vote in history is not enacted, what does that mean for our entire system, our law courts, our parliament, our monarchy? What does it mean for the lot of it if the vote's ignored or the vote isn't enacted properly?
So you think the deal as it is currently proposed is it fails to fulfil the mandate of the referendum?
I think so. Yeah, it does, because it gives away a lot of our sovereignty to Brussels still, and I don't think that's what people voted for. I think the Prime Minister judged that the Brexit vote was about immigration, and it clearly, all the polls show that it was about sovereignty, and that the main reason why people voted Brexit was about sovereignty, and this deal doesn't achieve that. And it also just feels a bit of a halfway house, like going back to talking about sort of principle. I actually have just as much respect for the people on the really hard Brexit side as I do for the really hard Remainers, because at least for me, they're really standing up for what they believe in. Whereas I feel like in a halfway house, it doesn't really, there's not really much principle there, and it's the future of our entire country. I would like someone to say to Brussels, or I'd like the Prime Minister to say that we will accept a free trade agreement for the whole of the UK, or we'll walk. But what I fear is that we haven't prepared for that, and I think that's actually really careless. I think it was careless upon the last Prime Minister to not plan for Brexit and to not allow the civil service to plan for Brexit, because I think that's irresponsible. And I think it's actually been really irresponsible. I'm really surprised that we haven't planned for no deal. I really thought Theresa May was a lot more cautious than that, and she was a lot more sensible than that. And the fact that she doesn't seem to have planned for no deal, I find really surprising. I really didn't think that was in her nature.
Are you scared of the prospect of no deal at this stage?
No. I don't think it's going to be good. I think it will be disruptive. And I think we could have even a good few years of disruption. But I think if Brussels aren't going to offer us anything else, I think we have to be prepared to do it. And actually, I think that if we actually showed we were prepared, I think Brussels would come down a little bit. I think they would be more reasonable, or they would offer us something else, what we're asking for.
Do you not believe these dire warnings of medicine not being delivered and food shortages and mass disruption to supply chains then?
No, because these are the same people that said we were going to have an economic sort of crash immediately as soon as we voted, and there was going to be a straightaway recession, and none of that came true. And I actually think the responsibility is on the Prime Minister for not preparing. I think if we are in a situation where things aren't very good, I would blame the people in charge for not preparing for that outcome. We've got more than enough resources to have prepared, but it feels like we've wasted nearly, if you count Cameron, if you count from when the Brexit debate started, it feels like we've wasted nearly 3 years. And I think that's really, really irresponsible government. I think that could damage the reputation that we have of being very risk-averse and of people trusting our party with their security. And the fact we haven't done any preparation for nearly 3 years now, I think that's really, really, I think it's really, really irresponsible of the people in charge. And also, again, we can take things for granted in this country. We're incredibly lucky to live in the country that we do. And even if things got a little bit bad, things are never, on the whole, things that we have it pretty good here. And, you know, it's just perspective, I think. I think even if there was a bit of an economic downturn, keeping it in perspective, it's nothing compared to what many countries have to go through every single day.
Okay, I think we will bring this to a close then on that slightly optimistic note, given that in the scheme of things. Where can people find you online if they want to tweet at you or so on and so forth?
So on Twitter, at Chloe S. Wilson, all one word.
All right, well, I think we'll wrap it up there. Thanks very much for speaking to me.
Thanks very much. It's been lovely. Thank you.